That's okay. Right. Okay. So I'll pick up from that. Yeah. Okay. So in terms of the outputs, then it was basically creating this stuff.
This resources to be online.
And the expected impact in due course will be people using that in order to inform their practice. Yeah.
We've also got additional outputs. So for instance, I'm doing a special edition in studies of higher education, are presenting the evidence that actually underpins those lovely resources. So you get two streams.
Right. Okay, thanks. Okay. And then, so within the project, what was your role?
I was principal investigator, which means that you have the academic lead, but you also have you make everything happen, basically. Right. You're the head of group, the head of the consortium. You're responsible for all the returns, etc., as well as the academic lead, and etc. So, jack of all trades, really.
So, in terms of thinking narrowly about the project management of the project, that was you. That comes as part of that.
Yeah. Exactly. It wasn't delegated anywhere. It was with me, and which was actually quite useful because it was a relatively small project. We're only talking about $200,000. And it was almost voluntary, that sort of money, to get that sort of resources. This is almost a voluntary piece by five centres. So nobody's getting more than about $50,000over 3 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to invest huge amount of time in it.
No.
They're just going to be picking it up and putting it down again.
Mm.
So, and that was very clear in my mind when I started. So I had to be the one that was the go-to, that was holding it. That whatever happened, Annie will know.
Mm.
Whatever, because nobody else had the time to go following around. I wanted them to be working on the pieces of work they were going to be doing.
Yeah, sure.
Where do I find this version of the documentation or whatever?
Yeah. And you were the direct point of contact with the funding body, were you?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So great. So and then thinking back to the start of the project, what were the challenges that you thought you were going to encounter in terms of what do you think was going to cause trouble in terms of achieving a successful outcome?
What I did was really have a good launch. So 2-3 days, get everybody together, and this was the longest they were ever going to be together. Really make them comfortable and get them to own the work that I'd planned. Because I'd put the proposal in, we hadn't had to be, never met before the launch. Everyone was doing bits and pieces, because with these proposals, you never get a chance to write them all together. You're just Skyping all the time, etc. So I had to bring them together to own what we'd actually come out with. Mm. So in fact, what I did was actually set them from the beginning as though we hadn't written the proposal and get them to construct the proposal again in its true glory and actually see what it meant for them instead of just reading it and seeing a project plan.
Yeah, so you've adopted that as because your concern was their engagement.
I was concerned was their ownership, I wanted them to actually own this.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by their sense of, if they're going to do it voluntarily, effectively, they really had to have a passion for it. There was something in this which had to speak to each of them individually.
Yeah.
And the only way I could access that was to allow it sufficient time for them to co-produce what that actually meant. Now, I know it sounds really daft because you look at it and you think, but they're writing it down. Surely they would have just reproduced what you wrote down. Well, they won't, because they're academics. They'll want to do something different. As it was, it all actually ended up looking very similar, because I didn't go out on a limb.
Yeah.
This was a standard research method I was using.
Yeah.
So people actually reverted to it.
Yeah.
But in a way that made sense for each of them individually. So each of them had their own stake in the success of it. And what we did in those 3 days is make them all align, really.
Yeah.
Against a common purpose.
Yeah. Huh.
And that was when, as soon as I had that, then little bumps on the road were going to be fine.
Yeah. Fine. Okay. So, Did you do use any sort of formal project management methodology like PRINCE2 or anything like that?
It was a variation of just standard, not PRINCE2, but just, you know, pre-PRINCE2, basically, yeah, yeah. When I learned project management, yeah. The usual Gantt charts, all the rest of it. Yeah. A very clear road through and a time span and task allocation, etc. Very clear working groups, working on different streams. The construction of it was fairly, and the reporting, a strategic 3-monthly meeting, a monthly operational meeting, held at the same time every month, so nobody has an excuse not to be there. Mm. all of that sort of thing was the standard piece, and then it was backed up by a online platform,
right,
which had a project management piece in it as well.
Yeah.
So the tasks were all written down there. People knew what they were doing. And it had backup with a proper, you can operate wikis in there, surveys.
Mm.
You could also do, it was a file repository, a very nice one, because it gave version control and all the rest of it. But it was also quite intuitive.
Yeah. So essentially, you had a comprehensive project plan, and that was the.
The front end of it.
That brought people work to, yeah.
I think one of the things about this plan, which is what this, the use of a repository, which I think is pivotal, is that nobody has to hunt around in their emails for the next bit. If you're not going to pick up this piece of work for 2 or 3 weeks and you've only got an afternoon, you could imagine you could spend half of that time just bringing yourself up to date. And then it's wasted.
Yeah.
So I got everybody into the habit of putting everything on central desktop. So you just went to central desktop, and it was like having that shared.
Mm.
And it was like going into a room where everything was laid out for you.
Yeah.
So you were going to work in the project room.
Yeah, sure.
And that worked well for everybody.
Okay, so I mean, you touched on this bit. I mean, were you given any sort of project management training in preparation for undertaking something like this?
Oh, I did it years and years and years ago. No, I think it was about, about 2000.
Yeah, so I suppose what I'm getting at is, from the university's point of view, would they think, well, before somebody takes on this role,
No, that's
an answer.
One of the things I found that I didn't even get, there was a project management tool on the EU website, it's called the Mobility Tool, which is basically a way of identifying if you're hitting your milestones, etc. It's a bit different to FO projects. In EU projects, you know, they have the output 1, event 3 type terminology. It's all very, you have to be very explicit about milestones. That's all up in the mobility tool, so you have to report into that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, nobody, that came in halfway through my project, and I was like, nobody thought of even talking to me about it. I was supposed to just find out how to use it.
Mm.
As it was, I didn't use it really until the end when I did the final reporting, but it was actually really easy.
Okay. And so at the start, how confident were you that the project would succeed?
Very. Yeah. I've done a number of EU projects. We will get something out.
Yeah.
Come what may, it will happen.
Yeah. Okay. And in terms of the project's progress, I mean, you said that you had regular meetings and reporting to the funders. So it was actually, you know, sort of that you were aware at any point about how you were doing against your...
I was also, there was two elements. There was the operational bit of being awareness, but also being very clear about the psychological and the emotional aspects of what was going on. Because with, again, these people going in and out, fluxing, if you had a slight disturbance in the field, shall we say... then somebody might well disappear for 2-3 months if it was that. And so you had to be really a little bit mindful of when was that all right?
Mm.
that you just let them, and you just gave them a ring at the end of 3 months and said, just to bring you up to date on what everyone else has been doing, are we going to see you in the next meeting type of thing, or when there was really a problem. And you had to be sort of, I felt myself as literally feeling, you know, feeling my way a lot with that. And we had changeover, people left because of illness, pregnancy, they left their organisation. Excuse me. We had a high turnover. So that was our major... major challenge.
Yeah, well, I was about to answer my next couple of questions about the issues that you did encounter. So we said, I said before, you were confident in weeks that you were going to get there. But, so the first question is, in terms of the issues you encountered along the way, ones which you'd known about at the start. So, you know, you said that the biggest issue was this question of disengagement. So were the measures you put in place effective in that, or did you, or was it still an issue?
No, they were very effective, actually. Right. Except they became a bit too effective, because then people started to want to keep their stuff to themselves. You know, they bought it in so much that trying to get them to share and play nicely was became another issue.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's, yes, I mean, that's, you hope to have a collaboration where everybody is, it's the best solution for everybody, but obviously, you know, that there may be a certain element of giving things up to play.
Yeah, that's it. There is an element, and I think it. That's where the consortium agreement. We all have a standard consortium agreement with the EU comes into play, because it then has all things like dispute processes. We never had to bring them to the fore. No. Things like publications and all the rest of it became very clear. Somebody went off and wrote a paper, and I'm like, where did that come from? So I would put a very stern voice on in a monthly meeting, you know, well, this has come to my attention, and everybody would be very sort of, oh, where's Happy Annie gone? You know, and it's like, and everyone would have their knuckles wrapped and moved on. I have it a couple of times.
Okay, so that was something that we should say you knew about in advance, and it happened. Yeah?
And it happened, yeah. And you knew that.
Okay, what about unforeseen things? Were there any unforeseen issues that arose that you had to deal with?
Yeah, I didn't realise that one of the people that I had who decided to make herself head of interviews, the interview methodology. Was incompetent. She'd never done it before. And she was working. She's head of a big doctoral program. And I was like, what's going on in this work group? This should be fairly straightforward. And all of the beautiful behavior, ethics for all the rest of it, everything was fine.
Yeah.
The schedule, the interview schedules, and all the rest of it. And I really didn't. And then I had the screaming abdabs, literally. She was in screaming abdabs about stress and all this she has to do and all the rest of it. And I'm like, what's going on? And so I said, don't worry, Pet. You know, I know it's been really stressful. How about I spend the weekend and I just run it through in vivo, a selected bit, and we'll just get a feel for the themes that are coming out. And then we can discuss it next meeting. Basically, that was me trying to figure out what the hell's going on and what, and you know, that was me not being quite such nice, but just finding it, using it as a ruse to get my hands on those interview data and find out what was going on. And then I figured out what was going on. She hadn't kept to an interview schedule. She hadn't kept to her questions. They'd had a lovely conversation about life, the universe and everything. And as a result, half of them were unusual.
Okay, so I think that leads into my next question then. What was the single biggest challenge that the project faced? Was it that unforeseen one? Or was it the foreseen one?
No, it was the unforeseen one. It was because then, and to this day, if you look very carefully at my special edition, there's no interview data.
Right. Okay. So I suppose, and then I guess just think, I mean, because this is more one of the key things I'm trying to explore. Would, when you were devising the project, could you have foreseen that and potentially mitigated against it, or was it just one of those things that come out of a, you know, it's a...
Apart from giving everyone a test at the beginning,
no.
I don't think you could have done.
That's fine. I think that's.
Because you have to go with somebody's
apparent expertise. No, exactly. Because there's this issue about black swan events, about whether the question is whether when we're planning whether it makes sense to worry about a meteor striking the Earth or not. And the question of it's a question at the project planning stage. How much do you invest in trying to identify all the possible things that might go wrong, or whether you just say, well, we know that there are some core ones we need to get right, and then we'll have to cope with whatever crops up later on.
Do you know what? I've just thought of what I could have done, what would be good best practice to carry on. And in, as I thought about it, 3 or 4 other project issues in other projects fell into line. And that's if it work, when using a working group where it actually requires its own little subhead to always have a deputy, a specified deputy to that person. And then the use of 2, the chances of having an incompetent in both, right, or a sociopath in both.
Yeah.
Right, which is the other one I was thinking about. I wanted a sociopath as head of the programme. We all knew what he was afterwards. We were like, oh, we got out easy.
Yeah.
The chances of that happening are fairly mitigated.
Yeah. So I suppose that, yes. I mean, in general terms, you would say, talk about single points of failure, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And say that's a process that relies on everything working right is potentially at risk all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this is by using but I suppose I was lulled because the working groups were quite small. There were only 4 or 5 anyway.
Yeah.
So you think, oh, you only need one.
Yeah.
But actually having a deputy would have been irrespective of the smallness.
Yeah.
I think that's the point I would have framed. Yeah. If it was 7, I would put a deputy in.
Yes, of course, yeah. Yeah.
But because it was small.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
But actually, the principle remains the same irrespective of the size of that.
True. Okay, so those were the challenges. But did the project meet its targets in terms of its outputs?
Beyond its outputs.
Oh, brilliant! And were there any changes made to the outputs as in the course of the project, or did you?
Yeah, we did. We one thing with a special edition, you don't plan to have a special edition. Mm. You know what I mean? You get given the opportunity and you grab it.
Yeah.
And also we realised, and that was the initial piece, that first launch, I hadn't put in a literature review. Because I didn't think there was enough literature to really rate review, and I had such little time and money, I didn't want to waste it.
Yeah.
And I believe most people should be up to date in their area of expertise.
Yeah.
So there was no point. Actually, no, somebody wanted to do it, and they actually came out with 259 pieces of literature related to, because they swung it wide.
Yeah.
But that became a wonderful resource, and people have really enjoyed having it, because we put an annotated bibliography up on the website of that as an output.
Yeah.
And they've just really...
Yeah. Yeah, so you saw the opportunity and were able to build on that because it became
an output that was going to be produced anyway, and we realised it could become an output.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds as if the answer is going to be this. Was there a point when the early closure of the project was considered?
No,
because it was
we hit the right lines all the way through.
Okay, what were the institutional benefits derived from running the project?
Actually, one of the things I put in, which I think has been really positive, is I put a sustainability-ish thing in there, which at the end of the project, that we would run a consultancy and actually make money.
Yeah.
So for the institutional benefits, yeah. Where one, the special edition and everything we produce means that we've got a solid ref entry.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's no-brainer now, which to have a no-brainer for ref is really splendid. Yeah. Two is that's worth people buying a huge amount of money to do that. So that's just like tick. Yeah. That was a really nice one. Second is we've now built ourselves as a centre of excellence in that area, which means that we can now go in and Middlesex is running now a consortium to a consultancy to go out and charge organisations to train supervisors.
Yeah.
So that's a nice little learner. And third, that they develop, they're in the middle of developing a postgraduate certificate in doctoral supervision based on the outputs, which will then, of course, become a nice little learner as well.
So it's, it sounds as if this project was very much aligned on the strategic goals of the organisation anyway.
Yep.
And that, so it was actually a convenient...
It was a totally... This was fully in line. There was a research group centre that I led in Middlesex, which, and this, I never get projects that don't align with the strategic goals of the research group. That's the only way to go. If I go off target, you won't get a ref, you won't get, because the special edition is ref, but I've got three or four publications on either side of it that show it is a coherent contribution to knowledge.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be that piece. Yeah. What I do when I look for this, if I'm working for my, you know, as a, as an academic, not as a head of school now, but as an academic, but the same thing applies, is set your strategic goals in all, from your knowledge of what your market, your research field, and your organisation want, the three align together, and then look for funding which fills in those.
Yeah.
From a variety, from a portfolio of funders.
Yeah. So in a way, the sort of the institutional benefit is baked in.
From the start, you never do it as an added interest, and you never do it outside. The organisation has to be waiting their hands out.
Yeah.
And you're giving them something.
Yeah.
So it was actually, I didn't think I could actually earn money through an EU project. But I was actually called short by a friend of mine who's an assessor for the Erasmus. Said, where's your sustainability plan in here? How are you, this money should always be used for SECORN.
Yeah.
How do you make that really consolidate going out? That's what we want to know. It's only 200 grand. What are you going to do with it that's going to produce a million at the other end?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where it came out.
Oh, okay, so in terms of sort of project management practice then, how were lessons learned during and at the end of the project? Were you, what was there a formal part of the reporting where you reflected on how it had gone and reported on that, or did you have a sort of brainstorming session with the group, or?
I had an evaluator that was actually nominated, not by me, which I thought was good. I gave to the International Association for Professional Doctorates, the professional body which I brought into the programme, so we could get a wider policy out there. I wasn't, you know, I wanted to make sure that what we were doing really got out there. With 200 grand, I thought we did quite well getting it out. And one of the ways is they nominated the evaluator, who then reported back to their board. And so she became the, and what she became is a critical friend to me, because she was present at the strategic meetings and any of our yearly get-togethers. So she came in, saw where the progress was, asked the difficult questions, and then fed back to me that, okay, it looks like you're a little off track here. What are you doing about this? And if I look at the forefront, I can see this is happening. that I found was invaluable because it validated some of the things I was seeing.
Mm.
But it also, if there was something coming off from left field, chances are she'd see it.
Yeah. So like when this issue arose about interviewing, that's, as you said, you've decided what you would do next time if you were in terms of how you'd look at managing that. So is that sort of reported somewhere, or is that sort of like, is that your personal knowledge that you, or you
No, she wrote a evaluation report which appended to the final report for the EU, so it's gone through that, and it's also available and circulated to all consortium members. We didn't go outside of that because it was actually quite, well, nice, you know. We did extremely well, and she really picked us over. So it wasn't something you wanted to publish, you know what I mean? Yeah. But you wanted to grab the learning.
Okay, fine. So in terms of what you suggested there, so in terms of, you know, running a project like this, so you learned, you know, from that experience, you learned, say, what to do different next time, yeah? Was there any way or in which that was fed back to the institution to inform practice elsewhere, or is this just personal learning that you know for next time?
I was really interested in this, actually, because I was looking at it in terms of classic project management from what I'd been taught and all of the things that I'd been taught and enjoyed. And I think I did most of the ticks that you're supposed to have, you know, the launch, the inventing unit, the monthly, the strategic, the consortium agreement, all of the rest. And I also did the people bit, making sure they met at 9-monthly intervals, even though they did this. When I looked at that, the rest of the consortium come from different disciplines, very different disciplines. And most of them hadn't done any project management. So it looked to them as though I was doing magic. And I really had that impression. And it was, and they didn't want to give it to me to do that I was doing magic, you know, apart from one or two, just things like, you know, if you want, Annie does these things and it works. Well, I'm not, I'm just doing what you should do. The psychologists and all the rest of it, the psychotherapists, all came out to the idea that clearly there was this special bonding going on between the group and all the rest of it. So it was very interesting seeing these other perspectives. What I was doing, and almost not wanting to realise that people are people are people, and we've got some real generalisabilities about how the way we like being worked with.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to do that for people, because then they can do the best work they can. Yeah. If you do it properly as the manager, it allows them to flourish, as opposed to pin them down.
Yeah, well, I suppose that without an overarching sort of project plan type thing imposed on you by the funder, then academic activity, you wouldn't think to, we need to make sure that there's, you know, that we need to make these mechanisms in place. You might say, well, that's, you know, that they might see them as being nice to haves rather than must haves. And therefore, they would say, well, you know, sort of, we can socialise any time, let's get on with the work, which doesn't actually work if you then, I mean, I suppose it's like editing a book, that it's a nightmare if your contributors are just random people who is sprinkled around the world. I mean, that because they haven't, they aren't a group, they don't behave like a group, and therefore that it's very difficult to use any sort of social pressure to say, well, you have signed up to this, we do need to, you know, you do need to keep your deadlines.
I think that's it. It's I knew that. And I knew that, so I do it whenever I have a project to do, irrespective, even if it's my own project, you know, that I've just come up with.
Yeah.
You saw me, I mean, yesterday we were talking to Stephen Palmer about setting something up. I'll fill you in later. And I was like, yeah, of course, but we'll need a project plan, and we'll need to do this, we'll need to do that, and the rest of it, and we'll have milestones, and good. Yeah. And Stephen sees everything the same. Because anybody who's successful in doing stuff knows you have to do these rules. We're human beings. We like the rules. I always say it's a bit like, if you'd excuse me for rambling on, it's like if you give children, right, if you let them loose in a field, they'll usually just walk around going, oh, But if you give them a climbing frame in the middle of the field, then all manner of wonderful creative play suddenly appears, right? Yeah. And human beings are the same thing. It's just you have to make sure that it's a climbing frame that you can, you know, be creative in what's it in. You know, if there's a fine line.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so in terms of so at the end of the project, the your employer then, was there any form of post-project review? Did you have to report back and say, I had this funding, this is what I achieved, this is what I've learned? Was there any sort of feeding back into the institution in that sense?
No, it's quite interesting because the institution, no. But the professional bodies, yes.
Yeah, sure.
And in fact, one of them's given us a whole day. The European Council for Graduate Education has given us a whole day to feedback to the academic community about what did we learn, how did it all work, all the rest of it. And that's a lovely opportunity. And that was, that keys into one of the outcomes was policy and also measures of esteem. And of course, knowing, being able to do that means that we are now part and parcel and will be in people's mind for the next working group on doctoral education or the next who will be that group that did that work on. So the dissemination of our we had to disseminate our expertise as well as disseminate our outputs, and I think people often forget that. That you actually, if you want to be part of your outputs, wants to be in policy, make sure you're talking to the policymakers. Make sure they're on board, and that you're feeding back to them, and they're waiting for your info. Don't just fling it at them at the end and go, oh, by the way, I've got this.
No, no, no. Great. Okay. So, and then at the end of the project, sort of how was the project closure process planned and implemented?
Well, I would have liked to have done a lot more better, but I moved myself. So I lost track. It was also quite interesting because at this point of success, then the vultures start to come down and want to get your goodies and want to suddenly that it was their good idea all along, which is hysterically funny because you can see them. You always know when you've got a good project because you can see them circulating. Right? Oh, somebody else wants to take kudos.
Yeah.
So, for instance, with that one day, it was my old prof who worked basically and suddenly was going to introduce it all as though she'd... And it did make me laugh. You can't get uptight about this. It's part and parcel of human nature. And you just... I knew we'd got a real blinder then if she was going to do that. Yeah. And because she actually came in very strongly, and there was also a closure of the institute that was where it originally based at the same time, it's been a bit sad. It hadn't been the bang that I wanted it to be, and I planned for it, etc., which would have allowed us to leap on a bit more in terms of getting the outputs, further outputs out, because there's such great data in here. But that seems to be being pushed by the participants themselves, which is lovely, who feel the need to have some sort of closure to it.
Yeah.
I think when I closed down the central desktop piece that we'd done, archived it, made sure it was secure archive, then closed it and deleted it out of the internet, so to speak, I was like, yeah, I didn't like that. And people felt a bit bereft.
Yeah.
Because it was somewhere they always go there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to sort of say, don't worry, it's secure, I've got it, just give me a shout if you need anything, and you can look at it, and if you wanted to, then... So it didn't quite go as we wanted.
No. So,
but it should have done, and people feeling the lack of it.
Okay, so you were responsible for, if you like, the data protection side, that you have these transcripts and things, which... is that research data that's now held in a repository, or is that data that's been deleted because it's no longer needed?
No, it's research data that's being held in a repository at the moment, which is a secure one that I'm paying for, because there's nobody else.
Right.
There's no other fund to pay for it.
Okay. So my question is, you know, you've done that properly, so you know it's done. Does anybody else know that you've done it properly? You see what I mean? Is there any sort of oversight? Did you have to say to somebody, I've done that now, you know, we're safe?
No, I did to the consortium, because they were co-owners.
Yeah.
And they now know who to come in. Whether they maintain that in their ideas, you know, in their their sort of institutional discourse, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
The EU did not expect me to do any, did not ask me to do anything of that ilk in these projects. It's not a requirement and it was not specified.
Presumably that's on the basis that they would expect the organisation to have its own policies in place and that you follow those and therefore...
Exactly, so that's the process. Yeah. Now, the point is, because I'm actually between, that gives us, there's a risk there, which is why I mitigated the risk.
I see.
But what I would have said was that... the university that I'm currently, that I was in, is part of a new initiative that's actually looking at that, and so it would have gone into that repository.
Okay. Right, okay. And so, we've got to the end now, so what have you learned from running this project in terms of your experiences, you know, how has what you did then affected your current practice as a sort of as a lead academic or project manager?
Validated for me again the real use of good project management awareness tools. I like sleeping at night, you know. I can actually do sleep. Overlaid by real sensitivity to the human conditions that are going around, particularly I was fully aware of the nuances working predominantly in a voluntary basis with these people, you know, that everyone put in more than the 53 days or whatever, and how to work, then also to appreciate each other's ways of working. You know, like Trinity, like Andrew, never deposited anything in the central desktop. I always had to do it for him. And, you know, all that sort of thing. And so it's... And I think there's also a case of the real benefit of... this was the first time I'd actually had a sustainability piece in with about earning money.
Yeah.
And I think that's real.
Yeah.
Real
learning. Sure.
Also the... what I've learned is how much impact you can make on 200 grand by beg, borrowing and stealing.
Yeah.
And small projects are worth doing if they're finely tuned and they really do well. And you want to have more project management in the smaller ones because you've got very little room for manoeuvre. So every bit of activity has to go to an output.
Yeah.
You can't have any wasted time. So, you know, irrespective of size, still needs the same.
Yeah, so you'd say really that you, well, because it was a success, it confirms your approach to managing projects. I mean, that seems to be where you're...
Yeah, I've learned a lot more on the line, but I've actually keep with the programme,
yeah,
keep the process, People thought I was being a bit over the top, you know, with the big launch and getting the grandchilds and all the rest of it. And though it was the psychotherapists and all the rest of it who were coming to me saying, where are we, what's happening, all the rest of it? I said, well, if you look at that, you can see we're right bang on target. Oh, they go. And you go, well, but they don't like...
No, well, they don't, they're not used to...
They're not used to it, but they actually ended up going, oh, that's all right then.
Okay. Right, brilliant. Okay, and then what did you find most challenging personally about the process of the project?
I'm just thinking, did I find anything that challenging about it? I enjoy doing these things enormously. It's a little bit out of your main day job. You're following a passion. It has to be a passion of yours to do it. And you're working with people who are equally passionate. And I know that I'm the best at the job given for that group.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, but I suppose I mean, you mentioned about sort of, you know, how you like to sleep at night. When you had that issue about the interviewing, and you had to have that difficult conversation with the person, or you know, sort of had to resolve that, was that something that at the time you found hard, or were you confident? You knew what you needed to do, and you just went through a process.
Well, yeah, I suppose, yeah, there is times, yeah, I suppose, you might have tweaked that one a bit. There are times when you just sit there and go, why does it all end up with me? And I, because you said it up like that, babe. comes the answer. Yeah. And you have to take it on the chin for yourself. That you wanted to drive this, you wanted to get it there. You want the kudos from it, let me be honest. You know, you want to be the bit in the other. And sometimes the challenge is, there's a personal, you know, the, just that, you're like, I'm overloaded now. I don't know what I'm doing. Yes, you do. You know, you've got all of that thing.
So there's almost like a time management side of it, that you have the responsibility but not the capacity to resolve, and therefore that puts you under pressure because you are having to
I've got a fair degree of in terms of project management, I've got enough experience to believe to have a fair degree of self efficacy about it. I know I can I'm a good solution finder if people are like and there are times when I go, which is equally useful. Well, I'm stumped. Who's got some ideas? And actually saying that could often free everybody up.
Yeah, sure.
So I've got even got the experience. Confidence in my colleagues. I don't have to really look after them. It's just nice if I do if we're doing that. But I don't have to. They're grown ups. They'll come up with their own.
So do you feel that? I mean, sort of. I suppose you're hinting at that there. Do you feel that you were pushed into having to be the big person, you know, having to be the sensible one, having to be the grown-up?
Yes.
Because, you know...
Oh, everybody loves you. You want to have one grown-up around. Everybody loves giving it to you. You know what I mean? And it's quite funny because they want to be you to be the grown-up. And then one or two of them have the same struggle. Because actually they're used to being the leader and everything. But they want you to be the grown-up, and so you can see them struggling. And you just have to keep... You don't have to be... You have to keep to your own bit of being clear, but not imposing your will too much. Letting them be their own. Be the leader as well. Hence why the use of different leaders in working groups. I was working group member for two working groups, but I was being led. So there's a fair amount of... There was a degree of metrics management here allows people to have a leadership role, which doesn't jeopardise the family. So you can still be the grown-up, but you allow them to be the leader in that particular area.
Yeah, yeah.
And that gets you around those sorts of issues. Yeah. Because at this stage, when your people are coming into EU projects, they're leaders in their field, and they're used to. So I've got to be careful not to go, be silly, slap down.
But I suppose that's, you know, they have the potential to go off, you know, to go off.
Often. There's a, usually, one of the things, somebody gave me some really nice feedback, had been in some of my projects, which is quite lovely, which is that you're always in safe hands with Annie.
Mm.
You'll get there.
Mm.
And that's the point, and that leaves you to actually do your flouncing around and everything. Mm. So I allow a certain amount of flouncing around and flicking of hairs and walking out and all the rest of it. Because you don't want to get involved, really. You have to stay as the safe pair of hands.
Mm. Well, actually, that feeds in wonderfully then to my last question. Were there occasions when you had to conceal and manage your emotions?
Oh, totally. It's like, I'll behave yourself. I'm holding this desk over.
You were putting work then into not reacting in your instinctive way. You were thinking more sort of pragmatically, thinking, well, you know, there's no point me blowing up because we need to end up with a solution, so therefore you have to just...
I remember there was one instance in one meeting where somebody was being particularly stupid, as only that is. And it was like really stupid, like, what worldview makes that okay? Please tell me. And it was, and also they were making me responsible. Now, that's not the way that it works. I can be the safe pair of hands, but everyone has to take responsibility for their own roles within it. And they were making me responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like... And I snapped just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Not fully, just slightly. It was a very useful thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't lose control. I said, I just need to go and take a walk for 5 minutes, so let's have a break for coffee now. After the snap.
Mm.
And when I came back, everybody was so much better. It was like coming back into a room full of naughty children. I felt slightly bad about it.
Mm.
But it did say, look, there are limits.
Yeah.
Come on, let's all grow up again.
Yeah.
You know? And the individual was very pleasant and very compliant for the rest of the day without me actually making any comment to them.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, I suppose in the way you said, as I said at the start, you were talking about sort of the project as a sort of the team as a social, you know, as I said, very much a sort of a social network, which means that, you know, that's, you know, whether it's hard work or not, but be that awareness of where people are coming from, what they're feeling, is part of being a successful manager.
Yeah, I mean, when we used to meet to start, I used to go around the table saying, okay, where are you at this moment before we start? What's the issues that are up for you at the moment that's going to, you know, anything that's going to distract you from the next couple of days, which we need to know about in case there's problems? And that really cleared the air a lot, because people would be coming from full-phone jobs, coming in for flying in for 2 days, you've got somebody's mother was dying, somebody's, you know... If we didn't know that, then you could have been bulldozing around going, come on, why aren't you getting on with it, you know, and all the rest of it. But knowing about it, if we were there for doing a 2-day workshop together and there's only 8 of us, you have to know those bits. Because otherwise, then you can support them, can you, then they get the best, they relax, they know they're not expected to do anything, they can have a quiet, you know, quiet sob on in a glass of wine around the table at dinner, you know what I mean? Whatever needs to happen.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, support each other. Or other times where you can just, you know, vent off because, well, everybody knows what universities are like and they're really painful. And just even have that sharing that you've all got the problem with finance.
Yeah.
And then why don't they let the students do this? And da-da-da-da. You know, all of that malarkey allows actually... melds the group tells you where those issues are. And you don't have to be, you're not indulging, you're not into therapy sessions, you're just teaching each other as being human.
Which, I mean, essentially you're moving their contributions from a transactional level to a relationship level, isn't it? That they're not there to get the 50,000 and their name on a report, that they're there as part of a group.
Yeah. And one of the things, I actually was on holiday and I ended up having Skype calls sitting on a bench in Delphi in Greece. And actually I didn't consider it work. Which is quite interesting. It was me, Andrew was calling, and actually he was asking about the project, but then we had this lovely letter about things and all the rest of it, and I was describing to him, and I'm showing him the view, things like that. Yeah. And he was like, it don't work then. And that's what I wanted to move it to. I suppose that's what I meant to really say. Because of the voluntary basis, you have to move into that ownership, that relational aspect.
Yeah, you need to get them fully signed up, because if they're only doing it, you know, sort of on the basis of a distant pragmatic goal, then they're not going to be keen enough to actually sort of carry it through.
And we had one person in the project who was like that. He was secondary to the main person from that consortium, and he came from southern Italy. Right, which you just thought would have been terribly, but he was very, and he does his whole life like this, very transactional. He measures every contribution up. And it was quite funny, because I actually afterwards I lost my rag with him when the project had finished, and I was doing some outputs, and he was saying, he wasn't being treated like a true professional about something else. And I actually wrote that to him. But I've always been aware that you always balance everything up. And so I can truly see why in this instance you may not want to have done this. And he took it as a compliment. And I thought, I had that right.
Yeah.
That's how you are.
Yeah.
Whereas the relational aspect, some people would have been quite hurt by that.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, I don't usually write hurtful things, but I thought, I'll just test this.
Yeah.
And he was like, yes, you're quite right, he says, and I'm really pleased that you see where I'm coming from.
Yeah, so he wouldn't see it.
And I was like, fine, Pep.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you very much.
Was that all right?
No, that's brilliant. Yeah, thank you. Yes,
okay.
You
know, it was a great project. I really enjoyed it.
That was very clear, yeah.
Enjoyed it. It was lovely.